Acts 27. Now, did you read it? If you read it, tell me what spiritual application you found in Acts 27. It's really a story, isn't it? It's really just Luke documenting what they were doing. You know, the writer of the book of Acts is Luke. And so he's really just telling the course of events. But in the daily course of events, you know, this was quite a journey. But in our lives, what is the most important thing? Trust God. That's it. You ever have a bad day and just have to trust God? You ever have a good day and just have to trust God? You know, we never know what to expect. Has anything ever happened to you unexpectedly? Always, yeah. I mean, stuff happens. But we trust God for His plan, and we trust that He's in control and that He's going to bring things, you know, to fulfill His purpose, to an end that meets His heart. And in all things, whether that's a simple thing or a major thing, we trust Him. Now, in this particular chapter, Luke records all the different steps that they're taking on their journey. Where are they going? What's the ultimate goal? Rome, right? He has appealed to Caesar. Had he not appealed to Caesar, he would have already been set free. But he appealed to Caesar as a Roman citizen. That's when that right to remain silent could really pay off. Sometimes people have the right, but not the ability. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah. Right? Yeah. Sometimes you're watching a series, and that's what this is kind of like, right? Verse 1, when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus' band, entered into a ship of Adramyttium. How's that? We just call him Adram. How's that? We launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. And if you recall, Aristarchus was there in the scuffle earlier and had actually been taken into custody. Verse 3, the next day we touched at Sidon, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go to his friends to refresh himself. Now, is that how you treat a criminal? This terrible guy, this rebellious figure? No, that's not what. But, I mean, people recognized that Paul was not a threat to anybody. And so they let him go and see his friends, and that was good. Verse 4, when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. We sailed over the Sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, came to Myra, a city of Lycia. There the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing to Italy, and he put us therein. So, you know, they're just going from, you know, port to port, seeing what, you know, trying to get to Rome. Verse 7, we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus. The wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salmone, and hardly passing it, came to a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was a city of Lacia. When much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. So the time to travel was done. It's different today, isn't it? Under power, go anywhere, any direction, against the wind, into the wind. You still have to fight the waves and such as that. And so you have to plan accordingly. But in that situation with sails, it's a lot different type of sailing. And so they were limited in their timing, you know, with the currents and such as that, where they needed to go, how they needed to go, and when they needed to go. So they're in a position now where the season for sailing in that region for where they wanted to go was about over. They were at the mercy of the weather. And Paul admonished them, verse 10, and said unto them, "Sirs, I perceive this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and the ship, but also of our lives." This is dangerous. This is a bad idea. And they said, "Oh, of course. You're right." No, they didn't. They said, "Prisoner, get back in your cell. Now, who do you think you are telling us what to do?" Verse 11, the centurion believed the master and owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. So, I mean, they're the experts, right? This is what they do for a living. This is what they do every day. So who are we going to believe? A teacher or a sailor when it comes to sailing? Now, these guys are masters. They read the stars and the clouds and the weather, the horizon, and you know, and the water. They know what they're doing. Every day, this is what they do. Ever go wrong? Experts ever make a mistake? Experts, yeah, of course they do. Even if that's what they do every day. That's, yeah. They could turn on channel 6 and you got just as much luck, right? So it doesn't really matter if they're the experts. Things happen. Weather changes. And, you know, with even though this was what they did daily, here is the man of God saying, "This is a bad idea." They say, "Well, we're going to trust the experts." And when somebody comes to us with caution, you know, at least consider this. The centurion did at least go to the sailors and say, "You know, one of my guys says he's concerned. What do you think?" "Ah, no problem." Why did they say that? Because they were getting paid to do it. And so they were, you know, follow the money. And that probably, it doesn't say it here, but that probably was the motivation. They knew they had passengers and cargo that they could ship and make money. What's the other choice? Sit in the harbor and wait. And look at it this way. There's a period of time here that the window of the season is ending. And the question is, has the season ended yet, or can we get a couple of more days of travel out of it? Another week or two. Are we just close enough we can just make it work? Anybody ever have a situation like that? Are we at the end, or can we make it work? Here we are. Paul says, time's up. We got to stay here. Look, we got to stay here for months. Is that what anybody wanted to do? Of course not. Was it the right thing? Would it have been safer to stay there? Yes. And that's what we're challenged with here. Verse 12, because the haven was not commodious to winter in, again, a few months, the more part advised to depart thence also. So they took a poll and everybody said, yeah, let's just go for it. Let's try it and see. Where they might attain to Phoenice and there to winter, which is a haven of Crete and lies toward the southwest and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. What you think? What happened? Yeah, I mean, they're not the only ones that made that mistake. But I have a little note that I wrote. I don't know when I wrote it in here, but it says they read their desire into the weather. How many of you ever got up in the morning and had stuff to do and looked in the sky and said, you know, it's probably going to rain today. I can just take a day off. How many of you ever did that and it didn't rain? Right? I mean, that happens all the time, like with sports and stuff. The weather's coming and you can look at the radar. The other day, somebody called and said, what do you think? Is it going to storm? And I said, well, it looks like it's going to break up before it gets here, but it's coming. I mean, it could develop and really be a bad storm. And so they canceled all the games, and it didn't rain. Went around us, right? It went around. But you know, I was watching radar. I wasn't just looking at the sky. Looking at the sky, I probably would have canceled for sure. But looking at the radar, it looked like it was coming, and developing and growing. And then all of a sudden, poof, just went around us. I was joking and said maybe somebody in Jefferson's got one of those magnets now. They just turn the weather off. But, you know, they read into the weather what they wanted. And we do that, don't we, in our circumstances. We've made up our mind what we want to do, and so we look at all the favorable circumstances to say we should do it. And we kind of ignore the signs that say, don't. And we need to look at the signs that say, don't. So that now they've loosed, they sailed close by Crete. Verse 14, not long after, there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon. And what is that like? What is that like for us? It's a hurricane. It's a European cyclone. And thus the name. So how many of you want to go sailing in a hurricane? No way. So that's, I imagine that when that wind picked up, they kind of all looked at Paul and had that little grin on their face like, huh, go back to preaching and leave the weather alone. Leave the sailing to us. And then the wind picked up and Paul probably just sat there. And when they would look his way, he'd just look the other way. Yep, should have listened to me. Verse 15, when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. Running under a certain island, which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat. In other words, they all hands on deck to save the boat. When they had taken up, they used helps undergirding the ship. So they take a rope and go all the way under the boat and tie it up, trying to keep it, you know, keep the shape so it doesn't all just fall apart. You ever see somebody drive down the highway with a whole bunch of stuff in the back of the pickup and they got ropes tying over it? That's what, except they're going under the boat, undergirding it. And fearing lest they should fall in the quicksands, they strake sail, and so were driven. Now we, being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. How's all that cargo working out? Remember, it was all about the money. They're throwing money off. They're throwing the cargo overboard. Verse 19, the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. So now all the stuff that you need to make the ship work, they're throwing that off. And just verse 20, when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. How many of us have ever been there? Where it just felt like we were just devastated, total loss, and just like no hope, hopelessness. Like, what is the point of being alive? Like, I've ruined everything. And whose responsibility is it? The master of the ship, right? The captain, the skipper. And it's his responsibility, it was his decision. Even against Paul's advice. It's not the first time anybody's made a mistake like that, not the last time. We all need people around us that can cause us to pause and think through our plans, what we're doing, what we want to do, so that we'll make sure we've really thought everything through. And then look at verse 21. After a long abstinence, Paul stood forth. So, Paul said, don't do it. They said, we're going to do it. They took a vote. They said, yeah, we want to do it. Loaded up. They said, look, I told you the wind's perfect. And so they got away from the shore. And then the storm came. For 2 weeks, the storm has hit them. Well, he says here, the third day, so that 3 days. And so they've really just been fighting it. And then Paul's just going along. He's just working alongside of them. He's not sitting over in the corner pouting. He has not yet said, I told y'all, right? He hasn't said that yet. He's going to in just a second. But he hasn't said it yet. Why hasn't he said it yet? He's letting them own their decisions. He's letting them take responsibility and even letting the despair set in. We really need to feel our feelings. Does that make sense? How many of us try not to feel our feelings? How many of us ever fight crying? Sure we do. And I can tell you that it's not good for us to fight it all the time. It's one thing to fight it in the moment, but we need to find time if we need to cry, to cry. And so we really need to feel what's going on in our lives, a sense and process. That's the word, process what's going on. Whether it's fear or anger or resentment or happiness or joy or sadness, we need to acknowledge and at least get to it, and then maybe even try to figure out why, if we don't know. Brother Ronnie. So they've done everything now. They've tried everything, and he stayed out of the way and just let them keep trying. But now everything's about gone. And Paul lets that set in. He doesn't rush in and save the day. He doesn't rush in and give them encouragement right away. He lets it settle. Let the despair settle in. Verse 21. After long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, sirs, you should have hearkened to me and not have loosed from Crete and gained this harm and loss. You should have listened to me. I told you so. You should have listened. And how many of us have ever said that? I know, we hate it when somebody else tells us they told us so, but sometimes you just got to say it. You should have listened to me and not left Crete and experienced this harm and loss. Verse 22, I exhort you, be of good cheer. Now, how effective is that? Guys, look on the bright side. I'm here to encourage you. There shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, whom I serve, saying, fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. So not only are you going to make it, everybody's going to make it. Everybody's going to survive. The warning at the beginning was, sirs, I perceive that this journey is going to cost us not only the ship and everything on it, but also our lives. And now he says, an angel came to me at night, and I serve God, and God has expressed to me that nobody's going to die. So don't worry about it. Just relax. Cheer up. Verse 25, wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer. I believe God. It shall be even as it was told me. Howbeit, we must cast upon a certain island. And when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight, the shipmen deemed they drew near to some country and sounded the and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. So the bottom of the water, in other words, the ocean's floor, the sea's floor, is gradually going up to land. So they say, we're getting closer to some island, some land. Fearing, verse 29, lest we should fall upon the rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stem and just wish for the day. So they're close to some place. They're finally going to get off this. Anybody ever been on a boat or ship and just could not wait to get back on land? Right? Seasick. And they're ready to get on some dry ground and get off that boat. Verse 30, as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship when they had let down the boat into the sea under color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion, to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved. So they've got one of these little safety, you know, escape boats that, you know, are ferry boats that they've put down because they're going to get out of there and leave everybody else behind. They've had enough. And the centurion cut the ropes and let the boat fall in the water because he didn't want them getting out on their own. Paul brought it to his attention. Verse 33, while the day was coming on, Paul besought them to all take meat, saying, this day is the 14th day you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore, I pray you, take some meat. Why didn't they eat for those 2 weeks? Seasick? Throwing a lot of stuff overboard, and they were saving it for an emergency, right? And not only that, anybody ever been heart sick and just didn't want to eat? Yeah. And so they're distressed, they're in despair, and they just haven't eaten. So they all, verse 35, when he had thus spoken, he took bread, gave thanks to God in the presence of them all, and when he had broken it, he began to eat. They were all of good cheer, and they all took some meat. So everybody's now enjoying a meal and kind of accepting his statement of that God had promised that they would all be saved, that everything's going to be okay. How many times have we heard somebody say, it's all going to be okay? And how many times did we not believe them? And how many times were they trying to encourage us, but they just weren't telling us the truth? And that's one of those phrases that I've tried to really take out of my vocabulary. Because sometimes it's not going to be okay. And sometimes we don't, even if we hope that's the case, we can't give people the assurance it's going to be okay. Or even that you're going to be okay. That's our prayer, that's our hope, but we don't know. And so we want to make sure that our encouragement is honest. And so they accepted his statement. They relaxed. Verse 37, there were 276 souls, 276 people on that ship. When they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship, cast out the wheat into the sea. So that cargo that was paying for this voyage is all lost. Verse 39, when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore, into the which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. When they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves to the sea, loosed the rudder bands, hoisted up the mainsail to the wind, and made toward shore. Falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground. And the forepart struck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. The soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. Because their charge is to deliver these prisoners. But the centurion, verse 43, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose. So just, it wasn't about saving everybody. It was about, well, if they kill the prisoners, they're going to kill Paul too. And he didn't want to. See how those relationships work? You know, our prayer life is the same way. Our walk with God is the same way. There are things that God will do for a home, a family, because there's one person in that home that God has interest in. You say, well, what about those other people? God's not interested in them? Yeah, but that one person is the one he's protecting. It may be that all the rest of them are rebellious against God. But that one person in the house is honoring God and worshiping God and serving God and honest and pure and all those things. And the rest of the family's not. But God's going to protect that home, make it a sanctuary because that one person. The Bible talks, Paul talks about that in 1 Corinthians when he says the husband is sanctified by the wife. The wife is saved, the husband's not. But God takes interest in that home and that family because of the one that is saved. And he gives extra protection, extra care to that home, to that family, because of the one that is saved. And so it's important. If you're the only one, especially if you're the only one in your home walking with God, don't get to the point where you say, well, you know what? If I'm going to be the only one, I'm just going to quit too. Because guess what? You may be the only one protecting your family when it comes to the considerations of God. The husband is sanctified by the wife. The wife is sanctified by the husband. And the children also. And so if you're the one walking with God and you're serving God, and you say, but I'm the only one, then keep being the only one until the others will join in. You need God's care on your home. So to save Paul, the centurion wouldn't let them kill the prisoners. Verse 44, and the rest, he commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land, the rest, some on board, some on broken piece of the ship. And so it came to pass, they escaped all safe to land. So nobody died. They might have wished they were dead halfway through it. But they all survived, and that was God's promise. God said, look, it's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out. But, you know, let's go back to the beginning. Should they have listened? Should they have listened to Paul in the first place and not set sail? Yeah. All of a sudden now he knows something, doesn't he? He told them that was going to happen. But just listening to God. So, go ahead. But it's also important that Paul told them before they left. Because if he'd waited until the storm arose, and then, you know, we never should have been out here in the first place. Somebody would have been. Right. And so you have to express it. And if Paul had listened, if they had listened to Paul, they could have avoided all this. And how many of us could go back in our lives and say, if I'd have only listened, right? If I had only listened, I could have avoided all this. And so we need people in our lives that will caution us. One of the things I think that we have developed in our lives is a resistance to share our opinions when they're contrary to people's choices. And so, if you don't like that guy she's going to marry, say so. If you don't like that girl he's going to marry, say so. But, I mean, it's not just about personality, right? If you've actually considered their character and say, you know, here are some problems that you're going to have if you marry that guy or marry that lady. Right? Exactly. And if he'd have listened, you know, so we can trace it back. I really hope that when we get to heaven, God's going to put up some charts. I know we all think we don't want to remember anything that happened here when we get there. But I would like to see, because I know I can look at my life and see some pivot points where things changed. Had I not done this, had I not gone here, had I not moved here, had I, you know. When I went to Bible college, the first place I applied to work for a job was Wendy's. And I had applied, you know, I was just filling out applications, but the sign at Wendy's said they were hiring. And I don't remember what it said they were paying, but it was, you know, better than what everybody else was paying. I thought, well, I need to get a job there. And so I applied, and then I applied at a Subway restaurant. And so Subway, they both called about the same time. And so Subway said, well, we're paying such and such. I said, well, Wendy's is paying such and such. And so they said, okay, we'll pay you that. But I sometimes sit back and think about, what if I'd have gone to work at Wendy's? Things, you know, those decisions, even they say working at Wendy's is not going to change your life. Yes. The people you meet, the places, everything has an impact. And the trajectory, you know, which direction we're going, how fast and how high and how far, it all changes. And we may not understand that it's those little things. So people just get a job without praying about it, without looking to God. You know, God is working all these things together, if we'll let Him, orchestrating our lives. But how many of us can look back at certain points in our life, pivot points, and say, what if that hadn't happened the way it did? What would be different today? And so if Paul had not gone to Jerusalem when the Lord said, I want you to go somewhere else, or when Agabus said, don't go to Jerusalem, or when the church said, don't go to Jerusalem, what if Paul had listened then all the rest of this? By the way, where did he write all these letters to the churches? Right? Some he was in different places, but some were prison letters as he wrote out of prison. So it all changes. God can use us where we are. So don't say, well, you know, I ruined it. I blew everything. If I hadn't done that, God could have used me. But now God can't use me. God can use you. Remember Brother Scott Hebron that was here a few weeks ago, gave his testimony. He sent me a picture yesterday. They're all out in Texas going to those prisons within 300 miles. And, you know, maybe not everybody will listen to what Brother Scott has to say. Maybe some people will look at his life and say, you know, he shouldn't be a preacher. So you know what he's doing? He's going to people that are like him. He's going to people with his experience that made the same mistakes he did, and he's touching those people's lives. God's working through him. So you say, well, I made a mistake and I can't. Then find your people. Because I'm telling you, God's got people for us to serve and people for us to reach. So, anything else? If we can understand, discern the leadership of God, that's right. All right, let's take a break.